Lecture 3. From English in America to American English.
What do the following words have in common? Raccoon, chipmunk, backwoods, bobolink, bifocal, filibuster, misunderestimate. You may have guessed it. They're all Americanisms, words and word usages that came into the English language from America, or came to be associated with the American experience or American life. Raccoon and chipmunk are adaptations of Native American words. Backwoods and bifocal are coinages, new words made up of existing pieces of the English word stock, including what were originally bits of Latin. And so is the much later and much disparaged misunderestimate. This comes from George W. Bush, known for his unintentional word inventions. The word bobolink is completely made up. It's a somewhat onomatopoetic word used to describe a small songbird native to the Americas. And filibuster? It seems to have come into English from Dutch via French and Spanish. But it probably wasn't all that widely known or used until American legislators began filibustering, speaking at extended length to delay legislative proceedings. Now, Americanisms have been around since the earliest days of English exploration and settlement in the New World, during the foundation stage of American English, roughly corresponding to the 17th century. They became increasingly common and increasingly commented on during the next two stages in the development of American English, exonormative stabilization and nativization. This is when Americans gradually shifted their orientation from British language standards to American ones, and when American English gradually became different enough from British English to be considered a dialect in its own right. Let's explore these second two stages. Recall that there's no exact chronology for the five stages in the development of New English dialects. It's also important to bear in mind that America's a big country. By the turn of the 19th century, American English on the East Coast had passed through its first two stages of development and was moving toward nativization. But it was only in its first foundational stage in the West. According to linguist Edgar Schneider, the first three stages would get compressed as American English moved westward, so the West would eventually catch up. In fact, nowadays, Americans tend to think of the center of the American language as located in the American heartland, in the Midwest or West. But long before there was an American standard, there was a protracted period of exonormative stabilization. We sometimes forget that the first English speakers in America weren't Americans. They were British for well over 150 years. And their cultural and linguistic orientations were toward Great Britain. Throughout the 1700s, the wealthier colonists in New England and the American South traveled frequently to England for business and pleasure. They even lived there for extended periods. And the colonial upper crust sent their sons to England for schooling. So essentially, the first generations of American colonial boys grew up as Englishmen, not Americans. The English-like manners and speech of colonial Americans were admired by both colonists and English people back home, and so was the increasing uniformity of American speech. The dialect mixing and leveling that began in the foundation stage continued, and there's evidence for an early American Koine, a relatively uniform dialect used for wider communication across large areas. British travelers to the American colonies often spoke highly of the language they encountered. Let's hear from a couple of these early commentators. One, William Ettis, in a letter dated June 8, 1770, had this to say. In England, almost every county is distinguished by a peculiar dialect. Even different habits and different modes of thinking evidently discriminate inhabitants, whose local situation is not far remote. But in Maryland and throughout adjacent provinces, it is worthy of observation that a striking similarity of speech universally prevails. And it is strictly true that the pronunciation of the generality of the people has an accuracy and elegance that cannot fail of gratifying the most judicious ear. Similarly, Jonathan Boucher, a noted preacher and political commentator, wrote in 1777, "It is still more extraordinary that, in North America, there prevails not only, I believe, the purest pronunciation of the English tongue that is anywhere to be met with, but a perfect uniformity."